Raj and I had the definitive Austin Reeves conversation yesterday. And from here on out, nobody's allowed to talk about Austin. So I technically owe myself residuals for having this conversation with you. But the thing that I just keep coming back to is if, again, the goal, if the point is to win championships, the athleticism that we're seeing in the postseason right now isn't going anywhere.
No, it's not. Watch these games and talk to me.
You know, like right. I keep on hearing it's like, well, maybe Minnesota was just a really bad matchup. It's like those types of defenders are in this. Like, you're going to go through those kinds of defenders to get to a championship.
Look at Indiana.
Yeah.
That's a big part of how they got there. And it was just a possession by possession. It's not just defense. It's just like a steam, a play by play. Go, go, force.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, look at Indiana, look at Boston with the two Jays on the wing. You have Derek White on that team as well. Now Boston's era, I think, is pretty much over now because of the Tatum injury, and they're going to scale way back on the amount that they spent on the roster. So they'll look really different here moving forward. But I guess my point here with Austin, and this is actually one of the conversations I wanted to have with you, is that just something that's always going to keep come up with Austin, is the way that he handles that athleticism? Is it possible to put him in a spot where he is that far down the game plan when he is sitting at $30 million plus per year on salary?
I think you... Not on a Luka team is my concern, right? Like, I didn't have these concerns when it was a LeBron and AD team. You've got size and athleticism. And I think with those type of guys, it can be them, but all four of the other guys have to be average at least to pluses athletically and physically. You can win that, you know, high level basketball, the rock fights that emerge in these 7-game series. If he's your one, he's totally good size for a one, and you're don't have a disadvantage at another place. But if you're, for example, one thing that Minnesota did a lot is sort of a combination attack where it was, we're going to pull Luka out onto the perimeter and attack his foot speed, but we're also going to have Austin guarding, say, Julius Randle down low, and he's going to be the low man rotation. So when we beat Luka off the dribble, which we're going to do, then it's going to be Austin Reeves trying to rotate over to be a low man against McDaniels, who just extends over
that one stat where it was like most shots defended at the rim, and Austin was like a top five player in the postseason.
That's right.
When we saw it. Yeah.
That's Chris Finch and his coaching.
I told people that he was a really bleeping good offensive really coach, good coach going into the postseason. The Austin thing, there's a reason the Lakers look so much better, Pete, when they swapped out D'Lo for Max. And now all of a sudden you had Austin at the one, and you had Max being able to go out and defend people on the perimeter. And Austin had some legs left over for offense because he wasn't also, you know, now he does have a little bit more legs when he does get the ball, because Luka is initiating the offense, and that kind of helps him to a certain extent. But you're still asking Austin, hey, man, can you start possessions on Ant? Can you start possessions or can you... Or will you be manipulated into, you know, defending a low man or operating as a low man? Like
we're going to switch a ton. So you're going to end up on Julius Randle a lot, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a spot where almost no matter what the Lakers do, in terms of personnel, I would hope that the Lakers coaching staff takes a look at their notions on switching to the extent that they do. And, you know, the physicality, like demanding more physicality out of the guys on their roster and, you know, fighting through screens. Or one thing that I really noticed, Pete, that the Lakers just didn't do enough of compared to what I've seen elsewhere is the amount of physicality as guys are getting ready to set screens. So like when you see, watch any team on defense as their guy is getting ready to set a screen, they're bumping them the whole way up. If you're going to set a screen, you'd better like plan to set it 3 feet to the left, because we're going to bump you to you're going to hope to get bumped into the spot where you're trying to set the screen. Whereas like you watch the Lakers and it's like,
well, we're going like to switch this anyway
off the area. Do you want me to like draw a circle where you're trying to set the screen? Like I think culturally the Lakers are going to have to really rethink the way that they go into some of these games. And culturally or physically or whatever, there are some guys with just some limitations there that are always worth taking into account. But do you think the Lakers will ever, like, I watch OKC, they foul on every play. I'm saying that as a compliment. I said that on Twitter the other day and people did not take it as a compliment, but I swear to God it is. It's like the Legion of Boom Seahawks, right? Where they fouled on every play and they were like, I dare you to throw a flag every single time the quarterback drops back. Mm-hmm. And do you think the Lakers can develop that kind of mentality, or is that something that's going to have to change with personnel?
Yeah, that's personnel thing. That's all young players in their early to mid 20s, many of whom that's their calling card. Wallace, yeah, and Dort and Caruso, even from a number two star standpoint, Jalen Williams is a dirty work player who's having a hard time scoring at, yeah, a number two type of level. But that's the benefit that you get, is that he's really good on defense for a number two. And you've got all of these guys that's just sort of how they're built. The Lakers prioritize ball handling a lot more than that. Or you know, sorry, one moment.
Yeah, I think of like you and Darius laid out a great point in the Rob Pelinka pod that you guys recorded about, like, and I texted you guys this after I listened to it. And it's like every single offseason feels like a reaction to the previous one. And it's, he never really goes into an offseason with like a plan or for a plan for an identity. It's a lot of like, all right, last year we didn't have enough shooting. This year I'm getting all the shooting. Last year, we didn't have enough ball handling. This year, I'm getting all the ball handling. Last year, we didn't have enough wings. Well, this year, you went into the season with all of the power forward type wings and not enough of like the foot speed type wings. And one of the things that I'm really kind of curious about here, whether they take a hatchet to this team or not, but as you get into the Luka era, I really want to find out at some point the way that Rob Pelinka sees the game outside of the stuff that they need based on the previous season. Rob, what do you personally value? And what do you, because to me, it seems like he really values skill, right? He really values
keeping his job.
That's the kind of joke I have to make, Pete.
I don't work for the team no more. I can say shit like that. No.
You're absolutely right. You know, his number one priority is that. But like, I still have no idea what he stands for as a basketball mind. We're how many years into the Rob Pelinka experience? You know, that's not great. That doesn't seem ideal.
Yeah, I think there are hints of it, but there's been a certain amount of trying to recover. Also, you know, post Westbrook trade and kind of getting back on their feet and getting, you know, back to just a decent sort of, yeah, team that I think this is these three transaction cycles. I keep talking about this on the LFR pod of this summer, this upcoming trade deadline, and next summer. It's sort of like a three-part play in a lot of respects that we talk about. Oh, what will the Lakers do? Will it be quiet this summer? It really, I'm going to judge it. And I think we're going to learn the answer to that question of what does Rob Pelinka stand for on a basketball perspective over these next three transaction cycles. And so I think it's a story to be understood at the end of that.
The last kind of question that I have here, and I do want to spend some more time talking about the playoffs that we've seen so far, because I think there are some interesting trends at play that are worth noting moving forward. What are the stakes here? Because the reason I ask is because obviously there's the Luka extension or trying to convince Luka to stick around. It doesn't sound like there's going to take a whole bunch of convincing there. He's a loyal guy, right? Even while the Mavericks internally were considering him fat and firing all of his friends, he was ready to stick around and be a Maverick for life, right? So I'm not too worried about Luka taking off. So I don't think that's necessarily at stake. But I personally think the Lakers underachieved in the AD LeBron era by Lakers standards, by any other team or fan, you know, like as if I was a fan of like the Vikings and they won a Super Bowl with that kind of tandem or whatever, like, I'd be thrilled. But the Lakers aren't the Vikings, right? And so I think they kind of underachieved with LeBron and AD, and they seemed ready to just kind of run out that string. I want to do whatever possible to avoid, you know, looking back on the Luka era and saying, you know, they wasted too many of those years. That to me is how I like what I think is at stake with this upcoming offseason. Whether you position yourself for an immediate bounce back whenever LeBron retires, whether you, through some kind of miracle, put together a championship level roster this year, whatever it is, I don't want to get back to what we saw from the LeBron AD era, where there was a almost a complacency to just say, well, you know, we'll get to the playoffs and we'll see what happens. That I'm done with that. I'm like, that to me is to that, to me, that notion, losing sight of that notion without a greater plan, that to me is what's at stake. But what do you think? What kind of macro level goals or what do you have in mind here for what's at stake here this offseason?
Yeah, I think it's, again, that bigger picture, decisively making a decision to try to win the next championship that you can. And if you've decided that that's not really this year, then make moves that can help improve things for the next championship, as opposed to just like, you know, we'll win 50 games and we'll be a four seed or whatever. And you can keep the lights on and be a very entertaining team with a lot of fun moments and all of that, but not really like making moves to try to get to that level. And so again, just not sort of floating in that in-between space is something that I'd like to see them do, but that might just be the era that we're in right now, is this sort of interstitial between the Luka and LeBron eras. But I think
there's something you can get from the in-between of the Luka LeBron
era. I do too. It needs to be building toward the next title. That always, to me, has to be at the peak of the pyramid, or the main thing that you're building toward is a championship team. Because I think they can be a competitive team. They can be a team that makes money. They can be a team that checks a lot of boxes that in reality, for a lot of NBA teams, including the Lakers, it matters to not. Yeah, I could say, take a hatchet to the team. Easy for me to say when I'm not. It's not my check at the end of the year that gets impacted by that. And a lot of times that can go sideways in a dozen different ways that, we're just going to break it down and rebuild. And, you know, 8 years later, you're in kind of the same spot. Look at what Utah's been losing on purpose. They don't even have a blue chip young player to go with, you know? And so it can just go wrong in a whole bunch of different ways but that's my biggest fear as a Laker fan right now, Anthony, is that we're this sort of perpetual 50 win team that isn't really a contender.
Oh God, you just made it sound like they turned into the Hawks. the profits are going to matter and let's just get to the playoffs and you'll get the playoff revenue from at least a round and kind of go from there. I'm good on that. What did you think, Pete, of the conversation surrounding the lottery this last week or so, where it's like, whether people are considering it rigged or not rigged, or my favorite conversation that I like to put, like I was laughing at, even on the show by myself, was the people complaining about the flattened lottery odds leading to better teams winning the lottery on occasion. And it's like, that's the point. That's why they flatten the odds, is so that these teams will finally realize, or hopefully realize, that tanking and going through multiple losing seasons in a row isn't actually as viable as it was before they flattened the odds. I feel like a whole bunch of people missed the point there.
Yeah, that was the whole point of why they made those changes in the first place, right? It's supposed to not work out well for you. Although I will say I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but there's been like four times in the last 33 years where a team with less than 2% odds, which mathematically is supposed to only happen once out of every 50 years, right?
Yeah.
If it's 2% or less, that was something that it was like really Cooper Flagg of all years after the Zion thing, after what was it, Wiggins and LeBron. Well,
like the Spurs, I guess, have moved up in every year that they've been in the lottery. Like basically, like, the conspiracy part of this was funny too, because the people who were so adamant about, like, if you're going to try to defend the lottery and how not rigged it is, I feel like the people who tried to do that did a really poor job.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
You know,
Yeah, a big accounting firm would never do something that dishonest. Ernst & Young, they didn't get, you know, there was like an ethics, they got fined for like cheating.
$100 million.
Yeah, on their own ethics exam. Like,
yeah. Here's the thing.
Cheat on your own. Yeah.
I don't want my accountant to be ethical.
Right.
I want you to try to get me every penny you can off of my. No, but like, yeah, the Ernst & Young thing. Or like Rachel Nichols was saying, how every so often people do win the lottery and that goes against the odds. And it's like, yeah, but the same person doesn't win the lottery four times in a row. Like, that's not how this is supposed to go. Yeah, all of that I thought was pretty hilarious. And I just can't. I keep coming back to like this notion of gosh, the flattened lottery odds. It's such a disaster. It's just totally not working. It's like, actually it is. It's these dumbass teams that keep losing on purpose who like, that's their fault. That's not the,
look at what the Pistons just did, you know, like,
yeah,
yes, they get the number one overall pick. I get that, but there's more than one way to build a team. You don't have to be trash for years and years.
Look at the Pacers, right? Yeah. The Pacers have managed to go from era to era without completely bottoming out, and they've had successful runs in the postseason. They haven't won a championship. And maybe the argument there is that in order to win a championship or get that kind of bona fide star that helps you win that championship, you do eventually need to bottom out. But like, I don't think you need to anymore. Look at all
Denver,
of the
look at Denver. Like they, what, well, Murray at seven was their highest pick.
Yeah. Well, you have Jokic, who obviously was in the '40s during a Taco Bell commercials. You had only Ant, I think, is left of number one picks, you know, that were super high lottery picks that are leading their team currently right now. Outside of that, it's like draft well, develop well. Like the point that I made on the show the other day actually was like, look, there are very few people more critical than me when it comes to the Lakers organization. But you do got to credit the scouting department, because look around the postseason. The number of former Lakers who were playing really well on these teams, mm-hmm. you know, like I don't see too many former Charlotte Hornets, Pete. Like there aren't very many. Like they tried to put one there, but it turns out they lied on his physical. So like I don't know. To me, the people who were complaining about the lottery system and how now it's not working and it's not redistributing the talent the way that it needed to. No, the league took a look at the way that they were doing it before, and they saw all of the high end lottery talent that was getting wasted in cities like Charlotte or on the Joe Dumars Pistons, or, you know, like all of these teams around the league. It's like, we're sick of sending the best talent from the college and international ranks to these cities only to see them waste and toil in bad markets and bad situations. Let's actually give some of these better organizations, these better teams, a higher chance at getting some of this better higher end talent, so that it's more those players become more recognizable quicker. I like that decision. I'm not really the biggest Adam Silver guy. I actually like the idea of flattening the odds.
No, likewise. It's again, I think it's served the purpose of kind of exposing those teams. This is not the way out of where you want to be.
Yeah. All right. Final thing before we get you out of here. Any lessons that you're taking from the postseason as we enter the conference finals, and any kind of larger scale trends that you have seen and potential directions that we're seeing the league go in from these playoffs?
The number of two big looks that there have been, and the amount of zone defense. You watch OKC and Denver, there's been a ton of zone defense. And that was one of the sins of the Lakers small ball groups of, if you're going to be a small ball team in 2025 in the NBA, especially come playoff time, you got to have some zone looks to be able to mix in. And every time the Lakers ran a zone, it was just dummy defense where you're sort of in the form and structure of a 2-3, but everyone's lazily got their arms at it. It was not serious defense, you know? And that, you know, that's something that's really caught my eye. And that's something that a coach has much more of an impact on the game with his defensive play calling than his offensive play calling. And I think we've really seen that around the league. And then, yeah, a lot of those two big looks, seeing Tibbs go to Cat and Towns, or Cat and Mitchell Robinson, and Robinson and Achua and Towns, a lot of two big type of groups. There are different ways to break down a defense, right? And sometimes it's you got to just punch a hole through the castle walls with force. And so seeing those veteran coaches go to what looks they go to and how they attack, who they target on other teams. And that's been the same. It's always the small guy or the slow guy. It's
pretty the white guy.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes all three are the same person, you know?
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. I think the two big lineup thing is really interesting to me. And that's why I kind of said I'd like to trade for Claxton and use the TPMLE on a big, because Rob said it is presser. And I don't know if it was just a phrasing thing, but he said, you know we need a big. And I'm like, bro. One big? You entered the playoffs with Jackson Hayes.
I think that's how they see it, though, Anthony. I think that they feel like they need one guy in the Jackson Hayes role that's very good, and otherwise they're perfectly happy with. They like that small ball group. It just can't be a 48-minute look.
Do you think you could play small ball with Luka, Pete? I don't think he can.
I do. I think you could play small ball with Luka. Yeah.
My concern with playing small ball with Luka, unless you're putting him in like the middle of the zone and you're just saying, hey, just gum up this area here, read passing lanes, stuff like that. Just get in the way. But my concern is I watch all of these small ball lineups across the league and they fucking fly on defense. They are moving and they're on a string and it takes 100% commitment to every single detail and every single, watch the way the OKC and Minnesota close out to shooters and then also get a foot back into the paint if they need to, and then continue to do that over the course of a possession. I've never seen Luka do that in his life.
Yeah, it's a strong argument.
And I'm really concerned. JJ sees the game one way. We've talked about this, I think. Luka sees the game this other way. And I don't know. I'm not saying ditch small ball altogether, but I do think this notion of like, yeah, we only need a big and then we'll just play small the rest of the time. I think is a recipe for disaster.
I think you're correct with that. I think they need two bigs. I think if they're going to go two bigs, it would be harder to go like the full 25 million type of big like Claxton. And then also an additional resource to get a decent enough player. Like you said, a guy like Adams probably goes for a little more than that. We'd see with Cornett, but it is a certain, maybe Precious Achiuwa is a guy you could get for around that amount, but might be a little bit more. If you're going to go that two big route, do you do two like 12 to $15 million guys instead?
I see what you're saying.
And split that up in that type of way. There are a couple of different ways that you can go about doing it, but I think the way the Lakers see it is they would prefer to just have one guy that's reliable at that and then go with those smaller groups. Your point is correct, though, and Luka's not the only problem in that sort of look, too, right?
Yeah.
This applies to LeBron. It applies to Austin. That are you going to be able to fly around with this personnel? Which, again, there's a lot of dissonance between the ideas, and we'll see how much Redick is wedded to those sort of ideas, or it was just the team that he had in front of him, like he said.
Great point.
At the end, right? Because he did have a weird team that he probably had to coach the way that he did to just get by with the roster they had. We'll find out a lot this summer.
Yeah, I thought going in, the Lakers would, I forget who coined the phrase, but instead of calling it small ball, they called it centerless ball. And it's like all that produced was being smaller and slower.
Yeah.
And Pete, I just don't know of a sport in the world where you're better off being smaller and slower. I don't think that exists.
That's kind of why I got my hatchet out, man.
Right. Like I look at that approach and now that I've never been a great athlete. I'm 5'10", so I'm not big by basketball standards. I'm huge in like El Paso. I'm a center out there. But like when I was playing in Southern California, I was smaller and slower. And, you know, it, shocker of all shockers, I didn't exactly play in college, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I'm concerned about, JJ's kind of view on basketball and the way that he prefers to see, to coach the game and to see it played. And that continuing to bash its head up against the brick wall that is the way that you kind of sort of need to play with Luka. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, like he said, like JJ said at his own exit presser, I need to coach the team that I have in front of me. Well, you need to start with the superstar. You need to coach the star that's in front of you. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if he's able to do that. Do you think he'll be able to, or do you think this is a conversation we'll keep coming back to?
Oh, I think it's a conversation we're going to keep coming back to. I think that one of the things from a first-time head coach, especially one that didn't have any experience as an assistant, is your ideas get stress-tested. And there are some things that you believe about basketball that are true about some teams, or maybe even most teams, but are not true about your team, for whatever reason, based on the personnel that you have. And so different theories of basketball, different styles fit different personnel more effectively than others. And that's part of the fun of this whole thing, is that, you know, you can learn some things that are generally true and general trends around the NBA, but what really works for your team, that gets developed over time.
Yeah. Well, Pete, this has been fun.
It has.
I think we'll keep on coming back to this. What you and I have talked about off camera and stuff is keeping these shows a little bit lighter. And I don't know. I was working on the trade machine and I got in a dark mood. So like that's where the mood to this show is. But, you know, we're going to be doing these every other Friday or so, or a couple times a month. And we're going to just develop this concept over time. And so if you guys enjoyed this conversation, this concept, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and then make sure you guys are following Pete's shows and subscribe to Pete's shows at LFR. One of my favorite things, Pete, since you guys have come to Odyssey, has been listening more to the shows, because I used to like purposefully not listen to other content, mm-hmm. because I want my opinions to be my own. Mm-hmm. But now I'm stealing from you guys like a motherfucker, and it's amazing. It's
free of charge.
All right. So, yeah, that is going to do it for this episode, this week's episodes of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you on Sunday.